The Mexica were an indigenous people of the Valley of Mexico, known today as the rulers of the Aztec Empire. It is from them that modern Mexico gets its name. They weren't always indigenous, actually arriving after a long search. According to legend, the Mexica were to look for a sign, an eagle with a snake in its beak perched on a prickly pear cactus. Wherever they saw that was where they were meant to live, in accordance with their gods, and Lake Texcoco was where they finally saw it. When the Mexica first arrived, they established a settlement on a small island which eventually grew into a much larger artificial island in the middle of Lake Texcoco, living amongst the remnants of the ancient Toltec Empire. There, they took refuge between 1325 and 1345, naming their settlement Tenochtitlan, which means among the stony prickly pear cactus fruit. Only a few years later, after Tenochtitlan was founded, the Mexica dominated the political landscape in central Mexico until being defeated by the Spanish and their indigenous allies, who were mainly enemies of the Mexica, in 1519.
On the left here, notice this row of figures. These are pictographs. Now look on the right and notice those pictographs. How much similarity do you see? It's pretty obvious, isn't it? Now, here's the kick. Everything to my left, this right here, that's from Minoan Crete, 1750 BC. It's in their museum. If you ever get there, you can see it on the main island. You can't miss it. If you do, you fall in the water. Over here, this is Aztec, 800 AD. Now, these are some of the things that we run into. They're mysteries. We have no idea what has transpired to have these things match so well. We don't have a clue. But these things happen. And this is what makes us diffusionists, is we believe that prior to Columbus, there was contact with the continents. And basically, we simply say Columbus was last.
Aztec and Minoan civilizations both practiced religious rituals, including sun worship, human sacrifice, and cannibalism, and they both revered the swastika. Aztec legend also indicates that before arriving, they once lived on an island in the middle of a large lake. The Minoans lived on Crete, which is an island in the Mediterranean Sea.
Aztec legends relate that they first emerged from a supernatural place called the Seven Caves. From there, they journeyed to Aztlan, an island city in the middle of a lake. It is from Aztlan that they took their name, Aztec. From Aztlan in the year 1116, they began an epic 200-year odyssey. But what drove these wanderers, who, like the Israelites of the Bible, saw themselves as a chosen people searching for their promised land?
Of course, there is a discrepancy in the dates of several thousand years, as the Minoan civilization ended 3,600 years ago, but there are other islands which the descendants of the Minoans had colonies on, some of whom were later known as the Phoenicians.
The Mediterranean Sea, 5th century BC. A great commercial network created by the Phoenicians. In hundreds of archaeological sites scattered around the Mediterranean, objects are often found that are completely extraneous to local civilizations and cultures. An Egyptian amulet in Greece, a Greek vase in Africa, a huge multitude of goods moving from one country to another and another had to be transported and traded in some sort of systematic way. And it is the Phoenicians, with their tall headdresses, their formidable ships, their skills in trading, and their courage on the high seas, who made a name for themselves in this pursuit. The Phoenicians originally came from what is modern-day Lebanon. They were organized into city-states, the most important of which was Tyre, whose magnificent Roman ruins are still standing. The easiest way for Phoenicians to increase their prosperity was by contact with other peoples, and the quickest route to new lands and cultures was the Mediterranean. They soon became outstanding sailors and astute traders, indeed the very best. And they started sailing and trading as far back as the 2nd millennium BC. To support their trade, they set up ports and founded colonies, built warehouses, and created a network of routes that touched on neighboring countries such as Egypt, Greece, the Magna Graecia, and Carthage in North Africa. Then they went on to reach Sardinia, the Mediterranean and Atlantic coasts of Spain, and farther south, along the coast as far as Senegal, and north to England and Ireland. A network of this size, with hundreds of colonies and thousands of ships, had to be well coordinated. For years, scholars speculated as to how the Phoenicians were able to communicate with each other in those remote times, to organize warehouses and trade in such a variety of goods. It was the discovery of this sarcophagus of the Phoenician king Ahiram, which dates back to the 13th century BC, that enabled archaeologists to understand the reasons for such great organizational skills. Engraved on the sarcophagus is the most ancient example of writing in alphabet form. It is composed of letters and not hieroglyphics. The Phoenicians were the first to invent an alphabet, a factor that proved indispensable in establishing their great trading network. The commanders of the Phoenician fleets had to have many skills. They not only needed expert knowledge of the sea and foreign lands, but they had to know the art of trading as well, what to buy, what to sell. One precious cargo of theirs was the mythical cedar of Lebanon, an excellent timber for building sturdy cargo vessels and warships. The timber could be bought in Baalbek, situated in the mountains that formed a backdrop to the Phoenician cities in Lebanon. In the Hellenistic period, the city of Baalbek was known as Heliopolis, City of the Sun. By studying the meaning of these swastikas and other evidence, such as the different colors of columns at this site, archaeologists discovered that the enormous temple that dominated the city was dedicated to the sun god after which the city was named. In 60 AD, the Cella of the Sun God was the most important construction in the entire sacred area, with 54 columns over 60 feet high, more than 6 feet in diameter. Having loaded the trunks of cedar wood onto carts, the traders would return to the coast where their ships awaited them. In the Bible, Ezekiel mentions that the Phoenician city of Byblos, which also lies in Lebanon, was the biggest naval shipyard in ancient times. Crossing the seas was not an easy matter, even with a good ship. This was one of the reasons why help from the gods was sought throughout the Mediterranean. In Byblos and other Phoenician cities, the remains of numerous Phoenician cargo ships have been found. The typical ship was 65 feet long and over 16 feet wide, large enough to carry a great deal of the precious cedar, as well as luxurious fabrics dyed with a reddish-purple pigment known as murex. The Phoenicians took their name from these fabrics. Phoenix, Phoenician, comes from the Greek word phoin, or red. Statues like this ephebe in bronze, or the famous Youth of Mothia, were found during excavations in the ancient Phoenician colony of Mothia in Sicily. The statues testify to the level of Phoenician trading in the Mediterranean, a veritable cross-cultural exchange. The ship, now loaded with vases, statues, and jewels, continues its journey to the west. It sails past the Pillars of Hercules at the Isthmus of Gibraltar and heads south along the Atlantic beaches of Africa between Morocco and Guinea. The Phoenicians were the only people brave enough to venture into the Atlantic. Ancient peoples were terrified of passing the Pillars of Hercules because they believed that beyond lay the end of the world. What was it that pushed the Phoenicians so far? The Greek historian Herodotus documented it in his writings. It was gold. The Phoenicians unload the merchandise and lay it out on the shore. Then they go back on board their ships and send up smoke. The locals see the smoke and place the gold that they are offering in exchange beside the merchandise. Then they withdraw. The Phoenicians descend from their ships and examine it. If they calculate that the quantity of gold corresponds to the value of their merchandise, they take it and leave. Otherwise, they go back to their ships and wait until they are satisfied. The African peoples were very taken with the showy Eastern goods and quite indifferent to the yellow metal that was found in such abundance there. This was the great bargain for the Phoenicians, leaving inexpensive pottery and jewelry and setting off again with gold. The ship would now head north. Excavations in England and Ireland have revealed that the Phoenicians reached even these far-off lands. Numerous finds have indicated that in exchange for pottery and jewelry, the northern peoples gave tin, a metal that was in great demand for producing bronze and the other alloys used by the Phoenicians and Greeks. Ireland was the most northerly landing point for Phoenician voyages, and having traded their goods, the sailors could now make the return journey. Through their travels and their trading, their ancient wheeling and dealing, the Phoenicians formed links with most of the known world at that time, enabling a variety of peoples to share the best that distant cultures had to offer.
Recently, tests were run on ancient Egyptian mummies that came up with astounding results. Evidence of their use of cocaine and nicotine showed up, in spite of the fact these are New World products. The Phoenicians were known to navigate by the stars, and in fact the Romans called the North Star the Punic Star, because of its use by the Phoenicians for navigation. But the Romans did not understand how it all worked. Another navigation tool, called the gnomon, was used to determine the latitude by the position of the sun. A Greek sea captain from Massalia, named Pytheas, learned the use of it and used it in his explorations of the Atlantic coast of Europe. Another navigational instrument, which probably was in use by Phoenicians, was the cross staff, a long sighting staff with uprights set at various spots, which allowed the user to determine latitude as well as direction. Furthermore, some instinctive oceanic navigation skills was very probable among these sailors, similar to the unerring way Polynesians could find their way to tiny specks of land in the vast expanse of the Pacific simply by observing formations of clouds, the flights of birds, and even the way waves form far from land. The islands of the Canaries, located off the coast of northwestern Africa, have stone ruins, the most imposing being a number of stepped pyramidal structures located right in the middle of a town. Farther out in the Atlantic, the Azores have turned up with a hoard of Carthaginian coins, a statue of the horse of Carthage, and a number of pottery fragments that could be Punic. Along the Atlantic seaboard of the Americas, a number of stone monuments have been found, usually inscribed in Punic, and many have the name of Hanno. Oddly, in northeastern Pennsylvania, near the town of Hawley, one of these stone monuments was found, inscribed in Punic, which stated, "This monument, placed by Hanno, do not defile." Even some universities are now saying that the Phoenician seafarers may have been trafficking the entire coast of Africa and the coast of India as early as 1500 to 1200 BC. The alphabets of India, Ceylon and Sumatra all originated from Phoenician. This could again be evidence of far-ranging contact. Inscriptions on stone are found throughout the Americas, and coins of Carthage have been found in a number of states. Nearly all have been found close to navigable waters, and oddly, all are of the earliest issues of Carthage. None later than the First Punic War have turned up. Even a metal urn with Phoenician themes and likely a Carthaginian trade item was unearthed near the junction of the Chenango and Susquehanna rivers in New York. When divers went to investigate the odd stone formation of Bimini Island near Florida, they found a shipwreck that dated to the 1800s. While searching, they found that it lay atop an older shipwreck, one that is positively Phoenician and dates to approximately 1000 BC. Dr. J. Manson Valentine of Yale University confirmed the origins of the wreck.
While there is ample evidence for pre-Columbian transatlantic travel by the Phoenicians, it should also be noted that there were several unique languages spoken in the Aztec capital when the Spanish arrived, and they did not use a Phoenician alphabet, having their own style of writing. My name is Robert Sepper. I'm an anthropologist. Thank you for liking, subscribing, sharing, and for the great feedback in the comments section. Take care, and I will see you again soon.